This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, good morning. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning, together with Tan Chen Li, and in an undisclosed bunker with that scary picture behind him is the one and only Philip C. Philip C, are you happy to be at home and presenting, beaming from your undisclosed location?
I just rolled up from bed.
You didn't run today?
I didn't. It was raining very heavily. So I used it as an excuse not to do any running today. So I just literally rolled out at about 5:30.
Can you not make us envious, please? For the rest of us who got up rather early to get ready to come into work. But I think this is the new normal, right? Everyone's got some version of hybrid work. And even though I think we have got somewhat of a handle on the Omicron variant, this is definitely the way it's going to be. There are going to be some people in the office and there are going to be some people at home. I actually like to come into the office because I find doing shows from home rather strange, and I'm very, very nervous about sound quality.
Yes.
Because in my neighborhood at about 8:30, there will be the Surat Kabar Lama screaming in the background. But that's Malaysian life, right? But anyway, as usual, we have a rather packed show. What do we have at 7:15, Shirley?
At 7:15, we'll be discussing nature-related financial risks for Malaysian banks with Rekha Reddy, Senior Financial Sector Specialist at World Bank.
And at 7:30, what is the big story, Philip?
Yeah, we discussed the latest developments in Myanmar, including the US government's determination that the military junta committed genocide against the Rohingya. Now, political expert Hunter Marston from ANU joins us for this conversation.
Okay, and we'll also be reviewing the changing of guard within DAP and what does this mean for the party moving forward. We have two commentators. At 7:45, we speak to political analyst Dr. James Chin on this in terms of the challenges ahead for the new Secretary General, Anthony Lok. And at 8:30, we speak to DAP Youth Chief Kelvin Yee on the party's preparedness for GE15, which seems to be closer rather than later. All this and more on The Morning Run today. Stay tuned for this BFM 89.9. No Time for Dreaming by Charles Bradley, which is extremely apt for our next story. By the way, this is The Morning Run. It is 6:07, Tuesday, the 22nd of March. And like I said, that title, No Time for Dreaming, is perfect because we are looking at this story from The Economist entitled Why Loafing Can Be Work. And who chose the story? Was it you, Chen Li?
Yes, it was me.
Okay, so why? Why does this story resonate with you? Are you a daydreamer?
No, I'm just trying to see how we can boost creativity here.
Do we lack creativity in the first place? Is there something missing?
To get
better.
Did I miss the memo?
No. But firstly, I'm a bona fide loafer.
Okay.
I admit it wholeheartedly.
You're natural at it, right?
I'm natural at it. I'm very good at daydreaming. It's like a skill and natural talent I've had since birth.
Wow.
So you score 10 out of 10 for this.
15 out of 10. 15. What do you mean by 10 out of 10?
A-star pupil. Okay, but let's look at this a little bit more in detail, right? Do you think daydreaming is good for work? Let's go around the room. And of course, Philip, 15 out of 10, I'm sure you're going to justify why it's the perfect skill.
I just say this is a conversation for the privileged, because not everybody can afford to loaf around in their job. So I hope like the Grab driver doesn't loaf around or daydream.
That's true.
So really, this is a discussion for those privileged few in the desk who have desk jobs, who you know are supposed to churn out PowerPoint slides and you know come up with
Excel
creative
spreadsheets.
Ideas. But actually, really, half of it can't be executed because it's all just daydreaming. So I think there is some value to it. But let's say again, this is not for everybody. And I think this is really an opportunity for the privileged few.
Okay, so what is your view, Chen Li? Are you a daydreamer? Do you think it's the perfect way to work?
I think it's not like a perfect way to work, but at a certain point in during the day of the work, you might need to just daydream a little bit, you know, to take a break. And then suddenly when you come back to the issue that was you were like struggling to complete, it's like, it's not an issue. Why were you stuck there for so long? You know, sometimes it kind of help you clear up your mind a little bit. I think this will help.
Okay, I'm not a daydreamer. You all know that, right? I'm like 110% on the go all the time.
Yes.
It's just my nature. I don't sit there and stare into space. For me, if I wanted to, for me, breaks are essential. I'm not saying that I don't take breaks during the working day. I just I think everybody relaxes and gets inspiration in a different manner. For me, staring into space, being contemplative or just like dreaming is not really my thing. I would probably be reading something else, cooking something else, yeah, or running an errand or cleaning the house. So that's my way of zoning out. But I think to each his own, because there's no right way about it. But I think what the article also suggests is that, you know, in the past, it was something frowned upon because of the nature of work. We were all in the office, right? 9 to 5. For us, of course, the hours are a little bit different. But we were at our desks and we needed to be seen, you know, typing away furiously, you know, or communicating with our team members, having meetings, filling our day with every second of activity. Nobody wants to be looking into the blank space with no, the click, clack, click, clack of the keyboard.
Well, I think that's an Asian issue, right? About being present in the office, like you have to show your face essentially. Mm. And I, you know, recently you've heard conversations about, I don't really care about you being in the office, but just show me the outcomes and deliverables. That seems to be the conversation. But I still think many of us have this mentality of being physically in the office and showing up in the office. And I think, as you said, Xiaoning, to each his own, right? Everyone is very different. Some people relish the structured breaks that you do, right? You have very clear breaks like Saturday or even Sunday mornings when you go for your long run. Those are your breaks. For others, I think they just like that spontaneous breaks that take place. And it's sometimes very hard to do that if you are stuck in that four ceiling with white walls everywhere. It is challenging for some. But again, it is to each its own. And the challenge also sometimes is that if you're in the office and if you want to do your work outside the office, it's a function also of the organization, yep, right, and your boss and manager, how well they plan the work out to make sure that you can do that.
There has to be an element of trust. And then this goes back to your employer. And I would put it to them that if you think your staff are not delivering, okay, and you think they're lazy, did you set them clear KPIs?
Yeah.
So that they know what they need to deliver by a certain time. And then you entrust them to give them that flexibility. And if they fail, which some will, because some are honestly lazy, then you know what to do. Then you need to pull back that leash. And unfortunately, maybe they are the ones that need to either sit in the office or, sadly, maybe they're not right for the organization.
But
for sure, right? Yeah, go ahead.
But I think it's also depends on how long that break is. Sometimes it could be just staring at a blank or taking a walk for like, or maybe only 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. It's the problematic ones that disappear the whole day.
Yes.
I have to say, when I'm stuck with a deep problem, like if I go for a run or a jog, I come back with a very different perspective after that. So if you're stuck on the same problem and looking at it for the past 2 hours, I do recommend to kind of take a break and then essentially just go out, get a fresh air, change the scenery, and then try and relook at the issue again one more time.
Well, all useful suggestions. We have another one, which is to maybe do the Wordle or Cordle. Apparently, that's a good way to relax. But anyway, tell us how you actually take a break during the office. How do you get that inspiration that you so desperately need? You can WhatsApp in 018-789-8899, or of course, you can let us know on Twitter. Our handle is at BFM Radio. Up next, some messages. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. And that was probably the most famous band from Liverpool. That was the Beatles with the song entitled Get Back. It's 6:18, Tuesday, the 22nd of March. And of course, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Xiaoning with Tan Chen Li and a Philip C in an undisclosed location, as usual. Next story, interestingly, are you good at recognizing faces or not? And apparently, fun fact, we in a lifetime may meet as many as 10,000 faces. Did you know that? This is what the BBC article that I think Chen Li also chose. It's called Face Blindness, Why People Blank on Faces at Work. It's thoroughly interesting because I'm guilty of that.
Oh, me too.
I sometimes can't remember people's... Okay, my problem is faces I can remember. Names is my problem. My big, big, big bugbear. Yes. Okay. And then I, despite my job, will butcher that name to death, okay? That's another flaw of mine.
I have a story to tell. I used to have a business with my business partner. Her name is Indy. You know her, Xiaoning.
Yes, I do.
And she also has this issue of face blindness. And she's like a veteran in the industry, right? So whenever both of us go and meet clients, you know, someone would come up to her and say, "Hey, Indy, how are you doing?" And she'd be like face blind and she doesn't know the person, right, or the name. She'd be like, hi, yeah. And then I'll poke her and say, "Do you know her actually or not?"
You're so bad, lah. You're basically in front of the person. Basically, you are so bad that it's ultimately you out her, right?
I out her straight away every time because I know she's going through that process where,
alamak, siapa tu, right?
But, you know, I'm trying to like coast it and so I can get out of the conversation ASAP, but I want to just bring her right back in, you know?
Actually, I have a similar story as well. You know, sometimes I bump into people in the lift and then they'll be like, hey, Jin Lee, how are you? And I was like, hi. And then we started to have a conversation and after that, I was like, who was that?
Okay, just to make y'all feel all a little bit better, although it's terrible, apparently learning and recognizing faces is one of the most cognitively demanding and neurologically complex tasks that we have as human beings, according to this BBC article. Okay, so maybe that makes you feel a little bit better, but hey, sorry, still no good excuse, okay?
Because... no good excuse.
It is just common courtesy to know someone. And I think, Phil, in a way, your approach of outing Indy, maybe not the best, but probably the best, the better solution. And maybe we should be the ones to do it, not wait for our friends to kind of push us over the ledge or set traps for us. But we ourselves acknowledge, I'm really sorry. I can't remember. I should know who you are, but I can't. Please remind me. And I've done that before. I say that outright because I rather that than try to like figure out in my little brain, oh yeah, who's this? How come I don't know the person? I know, but where? And then it just frustrates me. And I think it's human that people have this experience whereby they can't remember the face. So to me, acknowledging it is not the end of the world.
Well, I think for me, you know, being conscious about it is core. And that's why name cards are very helpful. You know, I always think it's irrelevant. But what I do now when I go for meetings is someone gives me a name card, I look at the name card very carefully and I try and remember that name with the face. And if you notice, many name cards also have the face of the person
do
as well.
Do they? Oh, I cringe at that. I really cringe.
Cringe at that, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
But
real
I do
estate
think.
Agents.
Yeah, correct. Many real estate agents do that, don't they? They put
yes.
their face in the name cards.
Correct.
But I do think it's important to be conscious. But very interesting now, as we enter the Zoom phase, many people have their Zoom profile and their face on their Zoom profile. So that helps actually a lot for us to remember to connect the name and the face as well.
I think for me, the other thing to remember is, you know, like maybe something associated with that person. Okay,
yeah.
So the name card is one thing. But maybe like, you know, you give something to the face. Like you met that person at this, he said something funny, she said something funny. And you try and do this association game in your head and hopefully it sticks. But, you know, doesn't this all become more complicated by the fact that now we only see each other's eyes? And I've noticed this reaction because when we actually meet the person without the face mask, then we're like... In your mind, you're thinking, oh, this is what the person really looks like.
You've been fantasizing.
I've not been fantasizing, but it's okay. Just like, I'm more like, oh, this is okay.
But I think the face mask is great. Like, it gives me a license to forget the names also, you know, to be very honest. I like that a lot.
You're terrible.
I am terrible. You know, I'm like, oh, I'm sorry. I've not seen you for ages. You probably have changed. Do you gain or lose weight? I don't know, you know.
Such an excuse, Bill.
But let us know how you associate faces to names. What are the tips you can give us to make things a little bit easier for all of us? Because it is a challenging time, a challenging task to remember every face, considering we meet 10,000 people in a lifetime. But up next, we're going to head into the 6:30 news bulletin, followed by, of course, more news from us. But to take us there is Smooth Operator by Sade. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. And that is You Make Loving Fun by Fleetwood Mac. Sorry, tongue-tied this morning. 6:39, Tuesday, 22nd of March. And of course, you're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Wong Shaoning together with Tan Chen Li and Philip C. Now, at this time of the morning, we always look at all the international headlines that have caught our eye. And there's one particular headline that is just tragic. Chen Li, tell us about this.
Well, this is about the airline that in China that has crashed. It's China Eastern Airline, which is a Boeing 737-800 jet. It has nosedive and is traveling from Kunming to Guangzhou. It actually they crashed at a heavily wooded area, and so there was a lot of fire, and all the passengers on board, the 132 of them, none of them survived.
Yeah, so tragic. And by the way, it is not a 737 Boeing MAX, which has been engulfed in controversy. But it's still sad nonetheless. So the Chinese government has basically come out to say that they're going to order a full investigation into the incident to ensure the absolute safety of aviation operations. And I'm quoting this from the Singapore Straits Times. You know, it's been plane crashes always kind of seem so tragic, right? I mean, we've had two in Malaysia. Well, one has disappeared, one crashed literally. Yeah. But it's that sudden loss of life, right? And we seem to think it's a safe way to travel. And in all schemes of things, it is, statistically. But it's still extremely sad.
And that's why it's a heavily regulated industry, right? In order to ensure that there is safety. I think the key here is finding that black box and then taking time to decipher what the black box is saying. I think the recordings there will be very critical to understand what is the root cause, because as we saw some of the pictures, really we find at the moment no basis for that record. And actually Chinese airlines as a whole have a very good safety record, right? And the last time a major incident took place was about 12 years ago. So this is really shocking and startling for us. It was a domestic flight, I think. And as Chen Li was saying, you know, it crashed on a forested hillside in southern China.
Okay. What else has caught your eye, Philip?
Well, on a lighter note, I saw Citigroup is planning to open a new hub in Malaga, Spain to lure junior analysts. Xiaoning, my question here is, when will BFM open an offsite in Langkawi, you know?
Stop dreaming. Back to reality. We're going to be based in Tamantun for a long time, which, by the way, is a rather nice suburb. It's not Langkawi.
Nice.
There's no beach next door, but still pretty nice.
But it's very interesting, right? They plan to hire 30 analysts and it's planned for this beautiful Andalusian outpost. It's really meant to support the investment banking team, focusing on technology, sustainability, health and wellness with the teams based in Frankfurt, London, Madrid, Milan and Paris. So really a small team there, but I think it's really a kind of a call for better work-life balance, you know, for that kind of work from home or work from vacation kind of perspective, I feel.
So where do we apply?
Where do we apply? I'll send your CVs over, right?
Yeah, please.
I always caution perks like this, because the better the perks, the more work you probably be expected to put, you know.
I don't disagree with that at all.
Can I bring y'all back to reality? Sometimes there's a lot of work, but no perks at all. That's worse, right? Okay, I'm looking at the Malaysian Reserve, and it's an article about Hong Kong, and they are looking to lift ban on flights, since we were unfortunately talking about the plane crash, from 9 countries in April. So the quarantine period for vaccinated arrivals will also be cut to 7 days in designated hotel, followed by 7 days of at-home monitoring. I think this is all part of... I won't say criticism, but maybe a way forward for Hong Kong, because it was one of the places where it was still maintained the harshest SOPs out there when it comes to COVID-19 in their attempt to maintain a zero COVID policy. And at some point, it was killing them as a financial hub and it was driving away a lot of the important expat community.
It's a very interesting point you make, because if you look across Southeast Asia, we are opening up very rapidly, right? You're seeing Thailand and even us in Malaysia start April 1st. And even overnight, we heard Indonesia is going to do also a full-scale reopening. So it's very interesting to see that the East Asian countries are taking a more cautious approach. So even what you're saying just now, Xiaoning, about the reopening in Hong Kong, it's still considered quite conservative if you look at the rest of Asia Pacific and definitely across the Western world.
And on conservative, the Bank of China is actually going to keep the loan prime rate at 3.7% for 1 year rate and 5 year rate at 4.6%. They're keeping it the same as per last 2 months. And some analysts actually think that this might make the yuan more appealing as a safe haven asset. While some actually think that this would prompt capital outflow to the other major economies like the US. So mixed reviews over there.
Yeah, I'm looking at Bloomberg, right? And they say that the reason for keeping interest rates pat is because they also don't want to flood the market with liquidity. And then that causes a lot of Chinese to invest in, you know, asset. It creates an asset bubble at the end of the day, which we did see a little bit of in the property sector, particularly because they have limited assets to invest in. So it's that delicate balance, right, where you want to be accommodative, but you also don't want to cause like a recession down the road, a problem that you can't resolve, which is in a way what the Federal Reserve is facing. facing now. Ultra low rates, assets are all at all-time high. How do you manage to deflate the economy? How do you bring down inflation without really killing it, without causing the economy to come to the grinding halt? It's a problem all central bankers face today.
Stagflation is becoming an increasing reality, isn't it? That is the biggest concern people have, right? High inflation, low growth. That is the biggest problem, I think, many central banks have to contend with.
Yeah, but the unique situation, let's say we look at the last time there was in stagflation, right? And that was in the 1970s. The issue then was the oil crisis. Oil now, this morning, $115 a barrel, up 7% for Brent crude. So oil prices definitely a problem. But when I listened to this podcast, and the new problem today is oil, actually our dependency on oil as part of the economy has reduced over time because we have moved towards renewable energy. Businesses, manufacturing, technology has made energy more efficient. The new problem is food security and food prices. And it's something highlighted in the Financial Times where there's an article saying Ukraine war sparks food shortage in Arab nations as wheat prices soar. And I think that's going to be a problem partially because emerging countries really don't have the reserves to find the food that they need to feed their people. And this is going to be a problem. But up next, we're going to look at some local headlines. Keep it here, BFM 89.9. Uber cool song, Mad About You by Hooverphonic. It is 6:50 Tuesday, 22nd of March. And of course, you're listening to The Morning Run. At this time of the morning, we look through all the local headlines. Can I start, please? And it's the news on the fact that three political leaders have unfortunately caught COVID-19, which reminds us how easy it is to catch it. So please practice your SOPs. Of course, political leaders are out there even more than the average person. But we do wish them the best. And those three political leaders are past President Abdul Hadi Awang, Dato' Sri Anwar Ibrahim and Lim Kit Siang. We wish them a quick, speedy recovery in the meantime. But yes, Philip, you have something to say.
Well, it goes to show that even yesterday, the Minister of Health, Kari Jamaluddin, was saying that they are discussing with the Election Commission, right, on safe protocol for COVID-19 positive voters. So, you know, I think it's inevitable. We have to live with it. So even now, when it comes to the looming GE15, the big question mark is, can COVID positive voters vote? And the answer is yes, but with certain protocols, I think, and they're working that out at the moment.
And I think KJ also added that when somebody asked him when is the right time to have the GE, he was saying that the most suitable time maybe is to have it 3 months after our endemic phase, which is starting on April 1st.
Okay, so count
ideal,
people.
Ideally.
So May, June, July. So after July, is that it? Are we looking at August? Because I've seen some analyst reports suggesting perhaps August is the perfect time.
Well, that means that if you want to do travel overseas, do travel before August. And no, don't fret, because the immigration is reading 970,000 passport books for renewal, according to the H Daily. So essentially, if your passports are going to expire soon, don't worry. 970,000 books are ready for renewal.
Okay. Staying on somewhat political news, this caught my eye. It's in Malaysia Kini. And I think things are heating up because the headline is, when PKR faced betrayal, some chose hiatus. And Saifuddin Nasution said that. I wonder who he's targeting in that comment.
I wonder.
Who's come back to politics?
Did we interview someone recently on that who was on a hiatus?
Yes, and he said that he's coming back and he's going to run for post number two. And that, of course, is Rafizi Ramli. You can listen to that breaking news conversation that we did have on BFM through our app or, of course, on our website. So, looks like the two, fight.
Cat fight. Well, I think that's what I think Rafizi wants to do, right? Enter back into full employment as a politician. But rest not, because the Dewan Rakyat yesterday approved amendments to the Employment Act, in which there were a series of amendments, 46 clauses, which cover things like maternity leave, flexible work arrangements and paternity leave as well, and also prohibiting the termination of female employees who are pregnant or suffering from illness arising out of their pregnancy, or except on grounds relating to misconduct. So a whole slew of employment-related legislation that was approved yesterday in Parliament.
Finally. This is 2022, right? Finally. Did they approve anything like paternity leave,
yes,
I wonder?
Yes, they approved a 7-day paternity leave. They also extended employees' maternity leave from 60 to 98 days.
Excellent.
Wow.
I think this puts us more in line with what's happening in, of course, Western countries. And even I think Singapore is very, very generous maternity leave for its female employees. So a little bit of good news despite the fact that COVID-19 cases are still very high. But I want to bring to attention a story that we tried to understand yesterday. And it's a share price story. You know me, lah, like my share price, right? And that was the incident of the NYLAX shares as to why there was a sudden surge by 15% when markets opened. And I couldn't find a reason. Well, now I know. Because Ncom has teamed up with subsidiary NYLAX, property developer LBS Bina, and two other parties to propose. This is proposed, not an actual contract. Propose a light rail transport system connecting with the railway shuttle link currently built from Singapore to Johor Bahru.
Well, it's
looks like people knew before the share price.
Man.
Yes.
It sounds like it. Well, I think that's why, you know, MRT3 saw a bump in construction stocks as well, isn't it? Because I think the slew of contracts that will be awarded from that huge mega infrastructure project is incredible.
Like I say, construction moves on news flow, not a fact. Yes, Chenley.
Yes, so the MCM, Ministry of Communications and Multimedia, has proposed that digital currency such as cryptocurrency be adopted as legal tender to help the younger generation.
In Malaysia?
Yes.
Did they have a little chat with Bank Negara before this, though?
I doubt so.
Because you need Bank Negara's buy-in, right, before it becomes legal tender.
Well, yes. It was crickets from what we've heard, based on what I heard from Parliament yesterday on this matter.
But I'm still waiting for the digital banking licenses. It's coming up to the end of the
first quarter, right?
Yeah, where yes. are those, what, five names that everyone's been waiting for? Will we get an announcement before the end of this month? Question mark, question mark, question mark. Talking about finances, national debt, guys, sadly, stands at 979.8 billion ringgit as at end December, or only 63.4% of GDP. Now, we know the statutory limit is 65%, and technically, federal government statutory debt ratio, which includes, of course, Malaysian government securities, Malaysian government investment issues, that only stood at 59.7%. I want to know what the plans are to bring that figure down.
And I think that's a question we tasked also early on, isn't it, with respect to MRT3 Corp, right? They plan to finance that whole infrastructure project through Sukuk issuance. So is that government guaranteed debt also going to be part of this 63.4%?
Oh, Philip, you're not good at financial engineering. You're not going to put it there. You're going to create an SPV and then it'll be off balance sheet item, which is what they did. Yes.
So naive.
But we'll be following that story very, very closely. Up next, of course, is the 7 a.m. news bulletin, and to take us there is No Matter What by Badfinger. Keep it here, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.